This is episode 71 of the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops with Ben Dampney. You can support this podcast by purchasing guides from www.ciaops.com/publications. There you will find a range of information on using technologies like SharePoint and Office 365. You'll also find templates there to use on your own SharePoint site to help your business get up to speed quickly. Reseller options are also available. All of this is available at www.ciaops.com/publications. Welcome along to another Need to Know podcast from the Computer Information Agency. My name is Robert Crane, and for this episode, I'm joined by Ben Dampney. Welcome, Ben.
Good morning. How are you, Robert?
Not too bad. Let's start off, as we always do, getting Ben to introduce himself to our listeners, let them know who he is, what he does, and basically what he's got planned for Christmas.
All right. Well, my name's Ben Dabney. I own a small IT consultancy up in Toowoomba, which is a reasonably large inland city in Australia. We work predominantly with small to medium-sized businesses and try to deliver them, our catchphrase, reliable and cost-effective IT solutions. So I guess that covers the gamut of things from software, hardware, support, Office 365, cloud, all that sort of fun stuff.
Excellent. And I see that you've recently taken the step actually into doing your own podcast as well.
Yeah. Look, the Small Business Technology Show, it's aimed at business owners and trying to give them some tech tips and, I guess, information about the different technologies and things out there in relation to technology and small business. So it's humming along.
Hmm. So you're assuming that the people that are listening are able to actually subscribe to the podcast, are you?
Yeah, well, that's probably the only flaw in that plan, isn't it, in that we need people to be somehow technology aware to get the podcast itself. But, yeah, it seems to be going along okay. We're getting a few listeners. So,
a quick question on that is aside from the techie people that you know, do you know a lot of people that actually do listen to maybe, you know, news, podcasts or other things? I mean, obviously a lot of people listen to podcasts, but, you know, outside the technology people I know, it doesn't seem that a lot of people. Is it just me perhaps? Do you, have you come across people that actually, you know, are into podcasts?
I do. Of the older generation, they'd be probably listening to things like ABC podcasts and that sort of stuff. It would certainly tend to be the younger generation that do take that up more.
Interesting. I think it's a great medium, and there's if you get to go to iTunes alone, there's a bazillion podcasts and a million
anything and everything. Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, it's really good. And I listen to, you know, probably a dozen a week now to catch up on material, and I think it's fantastic. And I think that's the good thing about it. It can be very targeted, and I think you can garner a very good audience. And that's, again, the idea with this sort of podcast is to get that information out, get people involved and hopefully contributing and getting benefit out of it. I think that's the main thing. So I think, you know, it's a really relatively easy thing to get into. Certainly encourage people who are thinking about it, even just ordinary business. It's not that difficult to get in there.
It's incredibly low cost. There's free tools that you can go to do it. Your laptop's probably got a microphone in it, and away you go. It doesn't have to be hard or complex to make it happen.
Yeah, and I think, again, there's no cost in doing it. You don't have to spend a lot of time in a studio or anything. And basically then you've got the material for a long period, and you can do one a month or one a week or one every 2 weeks. And again, even if it's perhaps recording a podcast to help staff get up to speed or explain to them certain concepts or keep them in the loop about what's going on, I think there's a lot to be said for audio as a medium.
Mm, absolutely. I agree, mate.
Cool. All right. Well, like I said, what I've done is I've asked Ben to come along and have a chat to us about one of the major things that most businesses, but many IT businesses, struggle with is getting employees. Now, Ben's obviously come from being a one-man band and obviously looking to expand and grow his business. Now, that obviously meant to gain leverage, you needed to look typically at another employee. So take us back to the far distant past, which is not that far distant really, and when you were sort of coming to this realization that, you know, look, I need someone else to help me in my business to basically grow it.
Yeah, okay. So look, our business had been going for about 7 or 8 years now, and for the majority of that, it's been just myself with subcontractors and also, I guess, some administration assistants and marketing assistants from my wife. So we, I like to say we, but in essence it was me. doing the day-to-day operations and servicing clients, and in sometimes doing quite a lot of extra work. You know, I've got a young family, and at a certain point it became a bit too much extra work and not enough family time. So I started thinking about, okay, well, what's the next step? How do I grow the business? How do I put someone on? How do we to move to that next level, and also increase our client base and hopefully profitability in the long term was the main aim.
Cool. So I think that one of the one of the recognitions is obviously we think about bringing an employee on and growing the business, but it sounds easy in theory, doesn't it? But it can end up being, it's a lot more complex when you actually start looking at the process, even before you get to the point of hiring.
That's right. I mean, we had some conversations, I guess, 18 months ago in a group we were in together, and I remember thinking at the time, wow, it's not just a matter of jumping on Seek and finding an applicant. There's a lot more to think about. It's certainly in terms of the business itself and whether or not it's the right idea to grow your business and add a staff member. In many cases, it may not be the right option to bring that other, I guess, body into the business and add that overhead and administration need that you've got. So yeah, there were certainly some challenges for me to try and work through in terms of, okay, what is the outcome we're trying to get to, and is it going to be worth it if we go down this path?
And I think part of it too is as we discussed, I think one of the recommendations I made to you was that what you should do basically is look at bringing on an virtual employee. So what you should do is imagine that you have an employee starting, and you pay them as you would normally pay an employee. You go through the whole process of onboarding and getting the documentation, but the employee isn't actually there. So after 6 months, that will give you a feel for sort of having an employee in a way, and will also give you hopefully around a 6 month buffer's worth of wages. So then you can bring that employee on and actually pay them guaranteed for a 6 month, and obviously hopefully generate from there. But the biggest issue is that a lot of people bring on an employee, and then maybe for circumstances beyond their control, they don't get the revenue, and they put all this time into an employee, and then they haven't got the revenue to keep that employee on. Because unfortunately, the hardest step is when you bring that first person into your business, you're effectively doubling your size and got to create all this documentation for the first time, register with the tax department, get pay as you earn, get all this paperwork done, which is a huge overhead, but you need to do that to move forward. So is that sort of the strategy that you took?
It definitely was. The first thing I guess I started to do was processize, if that's the right word, my workflows and my day-to-day operations and try and have a structure that I followed for everything. In my head I knew what I was doing every day because it's just me. I don't need to tell anyone about it. But to have a decent service level for customers and to provide a level of support that they've become used to, part of it was obviously documenting some of those processes and actually externalizing them. So writing down on some notepads, what do we do, how do we do it, what's it mean to be a member of DigitIT and the processes we follow. Now, that needs to be fleshed out a fair bit more. It's certainly fairly rudimentary at this stage. But the idea was that we'd have, a bit of a manual that we follow so that everyone's doing the same thing and working on to the same page in the book.
Well, I think that's probably the hardest thing is, like you said, it's a single-man band. You do everything in your head. You know where everything is. You know how to do things. Because you've built the culture. And then all of a sudden, having to, like I said, externalize that or actually endear that into a staff member can be extremely hard because, again, you don't realize the amount of stuff that you do hold in your head. And that's a real discipline. And that's something that, again, my recommendation is that you should be doing as much as you can no matter who you are, where you are, what stage you are in your business. The more you can document it, the more it's going to pay off down the track. So
I couldn't agree more, Robert. I think it's critical. The other thing that I'd note there on that is that you mentioned culture, and that's certainly very important in finding someone who's the right fit. You need to know what your culture is and what your clients see your culture as. It's all well and good to have an idea of what you want your business to be, but if your customers are purchasing and working with you because of the way you appear to them, that's really the most important thing, is to maintain that as well. So that's something I was conscious of as we went into this process, is getting someone who was going to be a good fit to the way I operated and to the way that our customers like to be treated and how they'd been served by us in the past.
And I think the important thing here is, in your case, especially your case, is the person that you're bringing on or looking to bring on is going to be front-facing with the customers. They're actually going to be interfacing with the customers. Now, you can bring on an accounts person, you can bring on an admin person, and they generally won't have that day-to-day, face-to-face operation with a customer. But in your case, the person you're looking for, I would assume, is you're sending them out as your replacement into the field, into the customer's site. So there's an appearance issue. There's, how do they handle the job? How do they finish the job? And then how do they document it? So that's even a taller order than just getting a normal, I suppose, office-bound worker.
No, I like the normal bit there. absolutely. It was certainly a key consideration. Is this person going to be able to sit in an office with our clients and appear at a professional level and be able to carry out the processes that we need them to do and keep our business growing, I guess. I've seen situations where bad staff can certainly change a business. So, I guess one of the things that happened was that I was very analytical about where we were going with this. So I spent a lot of time thinking about it and in hindsight probably too much time thinking about it. But certainly it was a key thing, right person, right fit for our business and our clients moving forward and someone who could potentially grow with the business. No, not necessarily someone who's right at this point, but someone who down the track can take on more responsibility and help us move to the next levels we're looking to go to.
Okay, so you've got a basic idea of what you're after, the sort of personality, the culture. You've done a bit of work in the background to get your admin and your processes in place to get ready for an employee. Now, the actual process of hiring, how did you do that? Did you go to put a classified ads in online, or did you know somebody? How did you actually go about the recruitment process?
So we used two main things. We used LinkedIn, well, probably three main things. LinkedIn, our existing client base, and then also Seek. And we formulated an idea of a position that we wanted to fill. So it was going to be a technician who was going to take the bulk of the, not lower end, but certainly the more day-to-day sort of operational stuff that we had going on. So that was the idea behind it. And then we'd work out, based back from there, a salary. So we had to spend some time working out how that was going to work and what sort of revenue we'd need to be generating. So there was certainly a bit of planning there. But once we had that, we wrote a Seek ad. We pushed that onto our website. We passed that copy onto also LinkedIn and out to our clients and sort of spread it out as far as we could within those channels, hoping that someone would respond amongst those.
Yeah, look, I think that it's always you do all this work and you put all the things out and then you actually, list it. And how was the response to those mediums? Were you flooded with lots of CVs? Were you, did it take a while? Once it was out there, what was the sort of response that you found?
So the main avenue that we got responses on was Seek. We had a bit of inquiry through clients who had children and relatives who were looking for work, but the majority of the response came back through Seek, and it was fairly, I guess we probably had 60% of the responses within the first few days, and then it trickled down over the 2 or 3 weeks that we had the job ad open. So we ended up with around 50 responses to the advertisement. Of those, I would say probably 40 of the 50 responses probably ruled themselves out by not being based in Australia or not being, regional enough. So they weren't sort of Brisbane or Toowoomba they'd sort of ruled themselves out on a number of factors there. So,
yeah, they were basically saying any job for me, please, sort of thing.
It was the tick and flick. Here's a job. Yeah. Copy, paste, done. Yep. So no cover letter, nothing to really put them out
so
as a candidate.
Okay, so you've got 60 and you're down to about 10 that are, obviously the on the first pass are the ones you need to look at.
Yeah, and they were a whole range. There were some school leavers through to very experienced IT people, in their sort of mid-40s. So we had a great spread there to choose from. We shortlisted and my wife and I sat down and went through each of the resumes, had a look at their experience and tried to work out who might be a good fit based on what they portray on paper, which is often pretty difficult to judge. But
so how did you, that process of selecting and getting down from, so take a step back. That how many were you looking potentially to interview? Like to go to the next stage from that 10, how many do you think you need to?
I wanted three or four. I
Okay,
wanted three
so
or four
fair
that
enough.
I would say, based on what you've written here, you're probably going to work in our business. You know, until I meet you, I won't know. But no, yeah, three or four I thought would be a
Okay.
good spread. You know, in that we're probably likely to find someone who's going to be okay for us.
So how did you get from the 10 down to the those three?
Look, I'm pretty lucky. My wife has worked on in at a university here in Toowoomba and been on some selection panels. So she had a good template that we worked off that had, you know, I guess some things for us to ask, some questions for them to ask. I'd get a bit of a back and forward. So that was the interview side of things. But then we also had as part of that another template that gave us some ideas about who was going to be right. So we ruled out, you know, we weren't looking for a school leaver necessarily, so that did take a couple of those candidates out. We wanted someone who had some level of experience in what we do, but not necessarily, you know, it didn't necessarily needed to be face-to-face client stuff. It could have been a back-end administrator. So we could narrow it down based on that.
Okay. So one of the things that, again, in my just in my input here is that my experience has been is you do get a lot of do get a lot of CVs or people wanting. Now, what I generally do would come up with a list of skills like in a spreadsheet, so a number of rows. You can say Active Directory skills, IT repair, whatever else, and then you put all the skills down, and then you'd go across and you would rate every candidate in a different column out of 10. So you look at their CV and you say, well, okay, that person's got, it seems to have AD in this, but they don't have this. And at the end of the day, it's not, you don't make a decision necessarily based off that, but it gives you some analytics to actually go down and score these people and then come up with I suppose a score, a total score at the bottom. You can look at that and say, you know what? These are probably an indication of the people that I do want to interview. So again, that's another way that I have approached that. So anyway, so now you've gone from your 10 down to your three. You called them in for an interview. Is that the next stage?
Yeah, so next stage was we rang each of them to try and set up an interview time. Some ruled themselves out in their phone manner as soon as we answered. One particular fella had his girlfriend answer the phone and tell us that he was in the bathroom. And anyway, it was, it certainly wasn't a professional way that we would expect someone who's a candidate to
And
be.
sorry, when were you making these calls? Were you making them after hours or during
Oh,
business
no,
hours?
certainly not. During 10:30, 11 o'clock in the
Okay,
morning at a
fair enough.
time
Yep.
when,
Yeah, they
you
should
know,
be
we
convenient.
may
Yep.
not get them, but they'd
Yep.
have an opportunity to call us back in a lunch break, that sort of
Yep.
thing. So,
Okay.
yeah, of the 10, we probably had five that we thought we'd potentially interview. And in the end, we managed to get three interviewees to schedule an appointment with us.
Okay,
So,
so you've got your three, you bring them in. So what's your interviewing process? What sort of when they, what talk us through typically what the interview process is going to be. Obviously that, they're going to come in and you take them to a separate room, you've got a set of standard questions, you get them to fill out form. What's your sort of interviewing process?
okay, so it was my wife Amy and I, and we had a template a bit like what you've described there, where we had a set of four or five questions that we wanted to get answers to. A little bit about them, I guess, personally, a little bit technically, just to get an idea of where they sat and how they responded to questions on the fly from people.
And sorry, were those questions technical in nature? Were they, what sort of questions were you
Not
asking?
overly. It was, what sort of hobbies do you have? Just to get an idea for someone. It was, what's your experience? Who have you worked for? What was your biggest challenge in that role? You know, what would you consider your strengths? All the standard, I guess, stuff. But sort of, it was more of a, it wasn't, reading line by line, okay, this is this. It was more of a conversational meeting where we had a couple of key points that we wanted to touch on and get some responses
Now,
to.
in this is this potentially the only interview, or are you looking maybe to do a second round of interviews?
I wasn't sure. Having not done this before, I didn't really know. I thought probably if we were stuck for candidates, I would probably then go to a technical interview where we'd just try and get a bit more in-depth idea of what their skill level was. It's all well and good to say you're an SBS 2011 expert, but until someone sits in front of you and asks you a question about one of the wizards or one of the features of it, it's hard to know. So that was going to be the next step if we sort of became a bit, I guess,
if there were some...
Undecided, yeah.
Yeah, undecided. There were a couple of people who were close on the line. Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
So our template allowed us to... We rated, I guess, out of five each of the candidates for their responses to each of the questions that we had, only so that after the fact we could go back to reference something and have a look and say, okay, well, you know, this guy was stronger here or not as strong there. And
so I think the two things that they're in, the two things, again, that I'd highlight here is one... I would think you need multiple people to interview because, again, you know, some people have a different persona and you know, different things are picked up by different people. So I think interviewing, having multiple people in the room or having them interviewed by multiple people is a very positive thing. The downside to that is I think you've got to be a bit careful that it can, if you get too many people, it can become very intimidating for a candidate to come in and see all these people lined up, and it's very, can be very hostile. I think the other thing too is the other, and we mentioned it before, is writing things down. I think that is just so important at the spur of the moment. If you, you know, have your notes and you're just writing quick notes all the time, you know, again, you've got to get these down because you're seeing, I would assume, you line these people up pretty much back to back.
No, we tried to. We certainly within a couple of days of each other.
So again, I think that then you get that. Sorry, you get that where they blend into each other. Oh, did Fred see this, or was Fred this guy? So again, I think the documentation. I think the multiple people is very, very important, and especially the benefit you're going to have is someone who's not necessarily a technical person inside your business day in and day out, and can give you this different perspective. I think that that's a very handy thing to have.
Yeah,
a smart move.
Yeah. And look, I think my wife's a pretty good judge of character, so I like to defer to her for certain things, and in this regard, you know, we were fortunate. We both agreed on the candidate.
And did all the candidates that attended, were they all suitable? Did they rule themselves out? Did you find any, you know, was it obvious, you know, that the one stood above the rest? I mean, how did the interview process go?
So, look, we had one very good interview, we had one reasonable interview, and we had one quite awkward interview. And We certainly both knew straight away. We said to each other after the interview, "This is the guy we're pretty certain will be. We'd like to choose." You know, I guess when you meet someone, you know if you like them fairly quickly. Mm-hmm. This guy had a nice attitude, was on time, well presented. I happen to know his father, so that didn't hurt his chances. I'd worked with him in the past. Mm-hmm. But look, it certainly, we both sort of had the same feeling about it, I guess, afterwards. We had the average interview was okay. The guy seemed pretty good. He seemed as though he could do the job. I wasn't overly impressed. I wasn't unimpressed with him. I just thought he was okay. And then the third guy sort of started telling us a bit of his personal history, and he didn't sort of enamor himself to us. It just didn't go the way. Yep. He would have expected, and I would have expected. So.
Okay. Now, when one of the things that I generally like to do, or you know, at somewhere in the interview process, is to have a standard range of questions and that are a bit different. So the idea is what you find is in most interview, if you're interviewing a lot of people, some people can be very expert at presenting a very different image. And, you know, they bring the CV, they know all the questions, they know all the what seems to be the technical answers. So I think that throwing in some of the questions, that are unexpected, so things like, you know, maybe favourite movies, favourite TV shows, some of the other ones that are pulled from people like Microsoft are, you know, why a man, how covers round. One of the other favourites that I have is, you know, how long does it take the Manly Ferry in Sydney to do a round trip? And it's not necessarily to find out what's wrong or what's right. Now, for me, in a technical situation, the most important thing, apart from the demeanour and the customer service aspect of the presentation, is you want somebody who can think and can work out the problem. You know, I'm not saying you need the right answer, but how would you find the problem? So the Manly Ferry is an interesting one because you could sit there and work out, okay, the Manly Ferry travels at 8 kilometres an hour. The distance, I think, is about, 8 kilometres, therefore X. The really smart person will go, you know what, I'd go to Google and look up the timetables and do one from the other. Now you and I laugh, but at the end of the day, that is going to get the right result much quicker than doing the calculation. So again, for me, one of the important things is to see how people think on their feet, because in a service business, in an IT business, you're going to go out there and 9 times out of 10, you've got no idea what's going on. The client tells you one thing and it's something completely different. You have to think on your feet and nut out the problem. And to me, for a technical person, that's the most important thing. So again, some questions like that I think are really beneficial.
Yeah, a good one I've heard, and I'm sorry I can't attribute it to the person who told me because I can't remember, but it's how do you cook an egg? And, you know, there's so many different answers to that, but what you're trying to get is the mindset of the person that you're interviewing, you know. And there is no right or wrong answer, as you say, and there's two different ways you can do it. You know, go to Google, search cook an egg, watch a video on YouTube, whatever it might be, or, you know, put it in the pan and see what happens. Either of them can be right, but if you're looking for a certain type of personality or role, then I think you're certainly right to choose one over the other.
Okay. All right. So we've done our interview and you've got your selection. So let's deal firstly with the people that didn't, obviously, that you weren't going to select. What was the process you went with them? You just contacted them directly, sent them an email. How did you basically let them know they weren't successful?
Yeah, just a follow-up call, to be honest, a day or two after we'd sort of mulled over it and made our decision. We did wait a little while, only that we wanted to have, I guess, some sort of confirmation back from the candidate that we chose. We didn't want to rule ourselves out with either of them. Even though probably both weren't ideally suitable, they may have been good for some subcontracting or some other sort of role there. So we didn't want to burn our bridges.
And I think you mentioned a very important part there is that, you know, again, those people may have also felt that you're not the right business for them. But I think...
Oh, completely, yeah.
And I think part of it is what we need to look at when it comes to employees is that we need, especially small businesses, we need this large network of contacts wherever they come from to help us grow our business. Now, part of that may be to provide resources in the way of staff, but it also may be someone to spruik the business, give us referrals, those sort of things. So I think it's so important to leave a very positive feeling for these people to say, well, maybe I can try again, or these would be good people. I know someone I can recommend to them, or, you know, I see they do good IT stuff. Maybe if I come across. So I think that is just so important. And again, putting them on LinkedIn, keeping them in the loop is so important these days, because the most difficult resource to come across is generally people. So I think that's, you know, that's the way to do it is to keep that, you know, personal contact and say, look, you know, the fit wasn't right. You know, it doesn't rule this out. We still like to keep in contact with you. You know, can we be of help to you in any other way? Let us know. So, great way to do it. So,
and look, I'd also add to that most of the candidates that we had, certainly those 10, who were you know, maybe not ideal, but certainly got their resumes, you know, through the door, and basically any other candidate that we receive resumes from, you know, via email or when they come to our office, we always keep them on file. We always tell them good luck in their job hunting. We always say, well, if anything comes up, we'll let you know, because you don't know where the future is going to be for that person, whether their skills or training will change, or whether they end up working for a client as their IT guy, and we're the ones supporting them. So, you know, I think you've got to take those as a potential source of business for your business at any point.
Well, I think, again, and that's the thing, I think that's the differentiation between a lot of businesses that are successful. They look at, you know, all their opportunities to basically promote their business, whether that's employee interviews, whether that's emails they send out, whether that's business networking. Again, they look at all those opportunities, rather than some people who think the only way I promote my business is to send out flyers in you know, PO boxes or whatever. So, I think that's a key element here. All right, We've obviously let the other people know. You've obviously let this candidate know. So once you've done that, what's been the onboarding process? How have you brought them into the business and sort of got them up to speed with what you want them to do?
Okay, so we spent a fair bit of time before we got to that point, I guess, working out how that was going to work. So part of it was some formal training on our systems. Part of it was shadowing me to see how I work and to get a feel for our interactions and our day-to-day job. And then there was also some workplace health and safety training that my wife coordinated based on talking to the government resources that are out there, and just building out a little bit of a manual that we sort of work through and to make sure that everything's safe on that side of things.
And then that's a very interesting point when you think about it, because as your own operator, you don't tend to worry about these things, because, you know, you look after yourself and you've got your own, you know, workers' compensation, I suppose, or whatever, income protection. But when you bring someone on board, oh, now we've got issues around occupational health and safety. Are things being done correctly and safely, and lifting practices and, you know, all that, first aid kits. And again, it gets very easy to overlook that, but as soon as you bring an employee on, they become definitely your obligations as an employer. And again, if you don't take heat of those, you can be in some serious trouble if something untoward happens.
Yeah, look, I must admit, I probably wasn't that excited about the process. I've got to say, I just thought, let's just get on with it and we'll figure it out as we go. But the wise head being my wife said, you know, how about we actually just plan this a little bit? She talked to the local resource. I think he was from the state government. I can't remember the exact department he was in, but he came and visited us. He sat down and he said, look, here's some worksheets. Here's some things you can, to get you started on your workplace health and safety stuff. Here's, one tip. Just work around the room and see the 10 things that could be dangerous and just make a quick note of them. What are the dangers, how to mitigate the risks, et cetera. And so we just started that. He said, don't get too carried away with it all. You can go and buy systems online and you can really go over the top. He said, you know, what you need to do is just make a start, get the key things out of the way, document them, and then just keep working on it as a process.
And I think that's, again, the main thing is to get started, and it's going to be an ongoing process. But the most important thing there is to show that you've taken steps to mitigate the risk, that you're actually doing something. I think the people that end up having issues are the people that don't do anything about it. I think, again, you're not going to be able to solve everything immediately, but part of it is if you want to grow your business and this teaches you good systemization, you know, if you have to do it for occupational health and safety, you know what? I should be doing it over here. I should be doing it with my call, you know, my inbound calls. I should be doing it with all the other systems. And of course, it's a pain and it's an overhead, but the focus is at the end of the day, if you want to convert your business into, revenue at the end of the day, if you want to on-sell it to someone else, this is what's going to add value to your business. And this is what a lot of people overlook, because if I'm to buy your business and you don't have that in place, I'm going to have to put it in place anyway. So it's already more value if it is already there. So I think that's what you need to see. It's not an expense. It's certainly investment in the business, with the end game being that if you do sell out, you've made it easier for someone and therefore can charge a higher value.
I agree with that. The other thing is that we don't necessarily want to be just two technicians, or, you know, we'd like to grow to a larger size than that. And if I've done it once, why should I repeat it and do it again? If we can template it, have a process, it becomes much simpler to bring new people into the system and get them working the way that we want them to work.
And would it be fair to say that during that process of the boring occupational health and safety, as you put it, that you've learnt something yourself about your business or the processes?
Oh, without a doubt. You know, there's certain things we've changed based on working through how I currently do it and realizing it's probably not the best method that we can be doing things. So look, one of the things that I've mandated to the staff member we brought on is, okay, if there's something you do more than once, if you have to do a job twice, then you need to document it. And we've just got a SharePoint site now. We've got some templates. So chuck a process in there. Let's start working through it so that we can actually get this built up. And so that we're both not reinventing the wheel if we have to do something. And, yeah, if it's repetitive, then we've got something we can follow, check it off, and get things a bit simplified and processed.
Cool. All right, so you've brought this employee on board and you've given them the basics, you've got them up and started, and they've, you know, let them loose on the customers in the world. And so what's the ongoing process with it now? Obviously, they're learning, they're still coming up to speed, they're doing the things that you mentioned. Do you have regular meetings? Obviously it's a small business, you may not need to do that, but how do you keep endearing that culture that, you know, this is what we're trying to achieve, you know, this is the business we're trying to build? How do you, you know, build, keep that into someone who's effectively not you?
Look, a couple of different ways. We're only a very small office, so we work pretty closely with each other, on top of each other some days, you know, right next to each other. So it's I guess I'm always seeing and hearing how Matt's conducting himself, and so far I've been incredibly impressed with him, and you know, certainly our judgment was correct in our interviewing process. But, you know, we do certainly have a regular meeting where we work through any tickets that Matt's worked on. We work through a few of the ones that I've worked on. You know, I certainly don't think I'm perfect in any way, so I like to get some feedback from him as well. We work together in that, try and get our service delivery to where it needs to be. I also work through, given that I'm now doing more of the sales and business development side of things, some of the things that I'm doing, so that he's got a bit of an idea of where the business is going, what the work's coming in leading up, and where things will be in the next few months. you know, we certainly had some challenges. I haven't managed many staff in the past, so it's been difficult for me to learn how to, I guess, treat people. or treat a staff member. You know, I've got a certain way I like to do things, and it's about me adjusting so that I can convey that to him without, you know, without pissing him off, basically.
Yeah, you got to put that whip away, I think. That's
yeah,
a secret.
Yeah. But, yeah, and I guess it's been – a lot of it's been me thinking, okay, well, if I was employed by someone, how would I like to be addressed in this issue? And
I think that you're right. And that's one of the biggest challenges, I think, for someone who has worked for themselves for a while and, you know, has a very strong, you know, ethic about the way they go about work is – that the person that you bring on, you know, it's not like you can make them a mini me or a mini you sort of thing. They are different people. They are motivated by different things. They are an employee rather than an owner. And that is a mindset, and you've got to look at it and say, you know, it's an important resource. How do I keep it running as optimally as possible? And again, the difficulty there is because it's a human being, that can be a bit difficult to manage. But on the other side, I think that the benefit is if you can get it right, the communication, I think, is the key. If you can communicate right and get them to understand why you're doing this and to be part of the business and buy into it, then the results that you can achieve can be quite phenomenal. You'll get much more than you ever expected out of, you know, that individual employee.
Yeah, I've certainly seen that as evidenced. I mean, very early on, I gave Matt some opportunities to take over the management of some customers of ours. You know, once I'd seen that he could follow a process and that, you know, his work was of a reasonable standard, then I said, well, you know what, let's not muck around. There's two or three clients that you can take over. If they ring, you're the go-to guy for them. I want you to go and do the regular maintenance. You know, I was really keen for him to take on a larger role there very early on to give him some experience at that end. You know, I wasn't necessarily looking for someone to do the basic technical work. I do need someone who's going to grow with the business and take those things on. So by giving him that opportunity, it's really helped. And I've had some fantastic feedback from him in that he's given us opportunities. He's more aware, I guess, of the larger picture for the customer rather than just the day-to-day tech stuff. And I really hope to grow that side of it. You know, our short-term aim is to get another employee relatively soon. I've seen the benefits of doing it.
So that was sort of the next question I was going to have is now you've got this, you know, employee working and working well by the sound of it. What do you see, you know, going forward? Obviously another employee, but can you sort of spec it out and say, look, I'm looking for five people and an admin person? I mean, you know, is it going to be more techs and then admin, or is it going to be a sales and marketing person? How do you see your staff requirements growing?
Yeah, it'll be another tech next, I think. I will probably always try to control the sales and marketing side of things, or certainly the sales and business development side. I think it would be remiss of me to bring in a salesperson when I guess one of the key things that I have with our customers is the relationship with them, the understanding of their business, and having worked with them for you know, in many cases, 7 or 8 years. So I think it'd be you know, a bit silly to bring in a salesperson to take that role on and for me to remove myself out of that equation. So look, certainly another tech now. Probably it will. I would need to see where it ends up, whether the admin person would be next or another tech after that. But certainly there is a bit more administration overhead as staff come on in the way things have gone for us so far. So it would be probably two or three techs and then an admin and then the same again. You know, I sort of see us at six or seven staff with a finance sort of a administration role, a service management role, business development myself and sort of third level engineering, and then a senior engineer and a couple of techs under that. So
on the technical side, how do you see what plans have you got for the ongoing technical development of this staff that you bring on board? Obviously, you know, we've got technologies changing all the time. We've got new things coming out. We've got different opportunities. You obviously want to give them challenges, and there are some limits around, you know, what is actually done in a small business. Obviously, they're not generally running multiple servers with massive active directories and those sort of things. I mean, is there enough scope to continue their development and keep them interested in the business and give them that opportunity, do you think?
Yeah, look, I do. I guess one of the things is that we work with such a variety of customers. The background that Matt had was with a very large transport business. They had probably 8 or 9 servers virtualized, a couple of hundred desktops. So he had quite an exposure to a reasonable enterprise environment. However, he wasn't exposed to many different technologies in that. You sort of, you go through the buying selection process. In many cases, get told by their incumbent IT guys, this is probably the best product for you, and then deploy that. So he's had very strong skills in certain areas, but not a wide range of skills. And so I guess working in a different environment like this, he has a much wider scope to deal with many different products. And we certainly do have customers in that sort of size, but, a great mix of customers. So I guess it's the variety of work for him rather than the specificity of work that would be of interest.
Cool. All right. Well, I think, like I said, we've covered a wide gambit here. We've gone from the, the pre-position where we're thinking about an employee all the way through, obviously, to their ongoing development, looking to add future employees. So if you can maybe summarize for us, Ben, if you're someone sitting on the other side and you're looking back at yourself, maybe 2-3 years when you first started thinking about an employee, what sort of key pieces of advice could you give someone who's sort of at the same point you were a number of years ago?
I think probably not to overthink it too much. I know that goes against probably everything we've been saying so far, in that we should have processes and templates and work to a certain standard, et cetera, and have some revenue safe so that we can pay wages. But really it would be to jump in. When you're starting to think about it don't hesitate too much. Don't overthink the ins and outs of it all. Yes, you need to plan, but don't be too hesitant to take someone on if the feeling's right and it's something you want to do. I think in general in business, I'm always a bit slow to make changes for the fear of the unknown. And in many times in hindsight, it's actually a benefit to have probably gone a bit earlier. So, jump in, have a go at it. What's the worst that can happen? It won't be the end of the world if things don't work out and it doesn't go to plan.
I think the difference there is the key to it, I would say, is you're not about abdication. Okay, you don't get someone on, give them all this work, and then you never touch them, never leave them, you don't are aware of them, you go off and basically have long lunches and come in late to the office. I think part of it is you need to look at that as a resource, ensure you're getting the maximum, and look at it from their development. They've come on, they're part of your business, but they want to grow their careers, their knowledge, their experience, their opportunities. And I think if you can look at it through their eyes, much as you look at the service you provide through your customer's eyes, that's going to provide you the benefit. And that takes a bit of doing for some employers because they're so used to doing their own thing as a single man business. But if you can step into the shoes of your employee and find out what motivates them as like your customers, I think you're basically guaranteed a really good result, and that obviously what you've been able to achieve, which is great.
Yeah, thanks. It's certainly been a really interesting experience and loving every minute of it so far. I was talking to another IT provider a couple of years ago and we were talking about doing a merger and a bunch of different stuff. And he said, once you get staff, all your headaches begin. And so this entire process, I've been thinking, okay, so when are the headaches coming? Because, so far I've enjoyed every minute of having another person in our business. It's made me learn a heap about myself and about the business. And, so far it's been a lot of positives. So,
Excellent. All right. Well, what we'll do is we'll get Ben to just let everybody know the best way to contact him if you have any further questions or want some information or want to give Ben some contributions after this episode, and ask Ben also to let us know about his business and obviously a bit about your podcast and things so that people can look up and follow more information about what you're doing.
So, look, if it sounds like you want to work for me, you can get in touch with me, and you want to move to Toowoomba, you can get in touch with us at digitit.com.au. As I said, we work mainly with small to medium businesses trying to deliver fantastic solutions for them. On the other side of the coin, we've got the Small Business Technology Show that I do with Ben Love, an IT provider out of Brisbane, and that's mainly aimed at business owners trying to give them the latest ideas on technology. So you can find that on iTunes or also the website, thesmallbusinesstechnologyshow.com.
Cool. All right. Well, again, I'll thank Ben on behalf of all the listeners for the input and the great information that he has provided in this episode. I think there's a lot of really great and key information that he has shared with us and as going through the whole experience. Now, from me, if you need to get in contact with me, you can find my details at my website, ciops.com. I live on the Twitter at @directorcia. And once again, I thank everybody for listening to this episode of the Need to Know podcast. You have been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For guides on using technologies like SharePoint Online and Office 365, visit www.ciaops.com/publications. By purchasing from the selection available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact.